This is Like Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Many journalists aren't afraid to ask hard questions, but not all of them are willing to put themselves in a perilous situation.
War correspondents tell an important story to the world, bringing words and pictures of the people whose lives are risked in battle. And in doing that, they put their own lives at risk. The deaths of reporters such as Marquette graduate James Foley and others in the Middle East drive that point home.
Well before the current set of dangers, Shorewood native Dickie Chappelle was one of the pioneers of war photography. She chronicled American troops in World War II, relief efforts in Europe, and some of the earliest American conflicts in Vietnam, where she lost her life 50 years ago today. A collection of her work has just been published. John Garofolo compiled the pictures and wrote the text that accompanies them. He joins us in the studio now. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mitch. It's my pleasure to be here.
Why do you think it's important not just to know about Dickie Chappelle's photographs, but the story of the photographer herself?
Well, I think it's because Dickie led such a life of great substance. And so it's not just a matter of the work, although I actually do believe that her work is critically important to understanding her. But I think that if you take a look through her life and her history, that there are some really amazing moments. And I think that there's life lessons for everyone. And so I think that she's representative of something that's bigger than just being a photographer or a war correspondent and sort of that that aspect of her life. I think there's bigger issues that she brings to bear.
Well, what are the big issues that you think we ought to think about when we think about Dickie Chappelle?
Well, I think that if nothing else, that Dickie was a model of persistence. Because during the course of her career, it didn't come easy. She really had to work very, very hard consistently from the very, very beginning of it to the very, very end. And that was something that you could probably ascribe to the fact that, well, there's gender bias. She was trying to get into a male-dominated field. And so certainly back in the late 1930s, early 1940s, there were not a lot of women photographers. I mean, certainly there were some other ones of note. But it wasn't something that was considered to be the norm. And so she really sort of fought against all of those norms her entire career.
Although it was interesting, as you look back at her childhood and her family in Shorewood, it basically that childhood was remarkable enough that it put her in a position to pursue this.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, there are certain key things about her childhood that are really important. The first of which is that her parents were both pacifists. So she's raised in a pacifist family in which they look at war as immoral and unthinkable for any reason. And so yet down the line in her career, she becomes a war correspondent. And what she sort of, I think, had recognized herself is the fact that she lived in a non-traditional household and probably is more common for the 1920s and 30s. But she had an extended family. It wasn't just her parents, but her grandparents had lived there, her aunt and one of her aunts and uncles. So the way that she says it is that essentially if there was one parent that said no, she usually could find some other adult that would sort of say, sure, why not? So she had somewhat of a permissive upbringing, but I think it was more her extended family than her mom and dad would have probably have liked.
Well, and that attitude sort of led to the way she pursued her career as a war correspondent, because she was able to, if one person said no, she found somebody who would say yes.
Absolutely. Not, and that's a very good point, because she did have to do that very, very often, particularly early on in her career. Later on, she was fairly well known, and so she didn't have quite such a problem. The problem that she had were getting assignments. But usually when she showed up in the field, by the time she got to Vietnam, she was already a known quantity and people didn't have quite so many objections. I mean, she still had some questions, but it was never the same.
But earlier in her career, I mean, there were objections. She had her credentials yanked.
Absolutely. And really, that probably was a factor of her being a woman. And certainly she did kind of open herself up for having her credentials pulled because of the fact that when she was on Okinawa, she went specifically onto the island of Okinawa during combat operations without prior authorization. In fact, she was told not to go. So she did kind of open up the door for that. But I sort of have a feeling that if she was a man, she probably would have had her hand slapped, not arrested, pulled off the island, have her credentials withdrawn and never be able to get them again. At least that was the presumption.
So we jumped forward to that. Let's go to her early assignments in World War II. What did it take to become a war photographer in World War II? This is not – these were not the days of prearranged embedding assignments that we hear about today.
Correct. At the time, the War Department controlled all of those those assignments. So it was centralized, and so she needed to get a credential. And what she needed to do was have a publication that put in for the credentials. So she couldn't just apply for it on her own. There had to be a magazine, newspaper, what have you, that did that. And she was able to find somebody that was willing to do that. She was initially sent to Panama, and so it probably wasn't as hard to go to, even though it was considered to be a combat assignment. But it wasn't the same as where they were expecting that there was an imminent invasion or combat operations. And so she went down to Panama and was able to get a credential. And she had the support of Look magazine, who she had done some work for previously. And so the War Department didn't have any problem sending her there. And in fact, there was sort of a loophole with her going to Panama, because actually her husband was in the Navy at the time. He was a chief photographer's mate, and so he was assigned to Panama. But the Navy had already pulled out all dependents, and so she couldn't go as a Navy wife. But she realized that there is nothing prohibiting her from going down there as a war correspondent. And so hence, that was the reason for the credential. I don't know that she necessarily had thought about becoming a war correspondent per se, but there was just an opportunity that presented herself that allowed her to do so.
You mentioned her pacifist upbringing. How do you think that informed the kind of pictures that she took in a war zone?
You know, there's a great quote from Salman Rushdie, which had I seen it, I would have put it in the book. But as these things go, I didn't find it until after the fact. But I think that it sort of speaks to that very, very well. And essentially what Rushdie had written is that a photograph is a moral decision taken in an eighth of a second. And I think that if you take a look at Dickie's work, that certainly is evident, is that she just wasn't taking pictures for the sake of taking pictures. She really did have a purpose. And her purpose was essentially to show how terrible war is, with the expectation that maybe if people saw how horrible war was, that being reasonable people, that maybe we would stop doing that. That never happened, unfortunately.
She also seemed to make a point of taking pictures of people doing ostensibly normal things in the midst of violence around them.
Absolutely. That was one of the things that was sort of interesting to me when I had seen this. And she was sort of looking at, obviously, the horrors of war. But there were also the civilian populations that were essentially dramatically affected by war. And I think that may not necessarily have been her original intent, but I think it was something that happened as a result of her having her credentials pulled. And so she had to do something. She had to make a living one way or the other. And so she was able to get an assignment from the American Friends Service Committee to go to Europe with her husband. That was conditioned on having a male figure with her.
Of course.
So exactly. So her husband went with her. And so they were covering the relief work that was being done by the Quakers at that point. So she saw both sides of the war. She saw essentially the terrible consequences of direct combat, and then she saw the terrible consequences of those that were affected by war. And so her and her husband did that for 6 or 7 years. They worked for multiple relief agencies. In fact, even for a while, they were not able to get assignments, and so they created their own for a short period of time.
If I remember correctly, there's a picture of the truck they drove around in, which was, you know, their relief agency truck and the place where they were living.
Right. Could you imagine being with your spouse in a confined space driving in a truck through Europe in the wintertime?
She ends up going at a very early point to Vietnam when it was still U.S. military advisors. What initially attracted her about going to Vietnam before it was really on the radar screen of a lot of people?
Well, by the time she had gotten to Vietnam, which was about early 1961, after she had gotten her credentials back in 1955, she had continued covering a number of wars around the world. And so she sort of referred to herself as the Bayonet Borders reporter. And so really Vietnam was just another continuation of the types of wars that she had seen. She had gone to Algeria and covered the Algerian rebels. They actually looked for her. They wanted to get her out there to cover their side of the story in their war with France. She had been to Cuba covering the Cuban Revolution. She had been to a number of those types of wars that, you know, again, we sort of now would call small wars. And so Vietnam at that point was one of those small wars. And so it was kind of consistent with the work that she had been doing. And in fact, that's what sort of was sort of interesting to me when I really dove further into her photography, because most of it really had sort of an ethnographic quality to it, because she wasn't necessarily covering combat as we understand it today, and certainly what we saw Vietnam become later on.
Right. And there's some pictures from, say, the Dominican Republic, which is a conflict that I think few of us even remember existed at this point.
Absolutely. And in fact, it was one of the things I was most interested about when I was digging through her work. And I knew she had been to the Dominican Republic and I'd seen a couple of pictures, but I hadn't really gone through the collection to the extent that I had had. And there's some great pictures there. In fact, if I had more space, I would have had more photos from the Dominican Republic because it is a war that people have forgotten about. I mean, certainly the Dominican expatriate community is very, very well aware of the consequences of it. But in terms of any real common understanding by the American public, we don't really give it a lot of thought. And I think it's tragic because, as you said, there were a lot of people that were killed. There were a lot of civilian casualties. It was a pretty tough fight.
Dickie herself was killed in Vietnam. Tell us about what did her in, if you will.
At the time that Dickie had gone to Vietnam on her fourth trip, she had found out that her last story, which she had written for National Geographic, it was an assignment specifically for Geographic, and she had been told by the National Geographic that they weren't going to publish it without any real apparent reason. So she was well aware of the fact that this major story that she had worked on for a fairly considerable amount of time for a very, very prestigious publication was not going to get published. She had spent some time in the Dominican Republic, and you know, certainly, as you had mentioned, there wasn't a lot of dramatic interest in the war in the Dominican Republic because it was situated right in the middle of the buildup for Vietnam. So it was really unfortunate timing in terms of people understanding and being fairly empathetic about what was going on in the Dominican Republic. But she also was 46 years old. She knew she was getting older. She knew that there were very few people that were her age that were covering wars. She had a couple of knee surgeries. And so she went to Vietnam with the expectation that, you know, this is getting harder for me and I certainly don't want to be a drain on the troops. And she was very, very well aware of the fact that she was having trouble getting assignments. She had trouble getting the last assignment. And unfortunately, she wasn't getting any younger. So on the last day, which would have been November 4th, 1965 at 7:58, the Marine squad that she was with had moved out. And very shortly thereafter, she used to position herself generally behind the person that was on point, so the front of whatever squad or element she was working with. And that Marine tripped a booby trap, which was a grenade and mortar combination, which sprayed shrapnel out, hitting seven people, six Marines and Dickie Chappelle. And unfortunately, Dickie was the only one that died. The shrapnel cut her carotid artery, and so being in the field, there was really not that much that could be done for her. Unfortunately, in some ways, it was sort of ironic that the only civilian, the only non-combatant, was the one that was killed.
And there's maybe a truly heartbreaking picture of her having the last rites performed. That closes this book, essentially.
Yes, it is. When I first saw that picture, it was so moving to me. I felt like it was one of my family members that I had been seeing because I hadn't seen the picture initially. And it is really a very powerful, very poignant photo. And unfortunately, the irony of it is that that Henri Huet, who was the photographer that took the photo, was killed himself 4 years later.
Why are you the one to tell this story?
Well, I would probably say that the simple answer would be I'm probably more stubborn than smart. But that's why I really am I really admire Dickie for her persistence because I've been working on this story for 24 years and the original idea was to work on a screenplay, which I have worked on and still working on it because I think that the story has merit as a screenplay. But somewhere along the line, it occurred to me that there was not a book that featured her photographic work. And so there was a tremendous body of her work, 23,000 images over at the Wisconsin Historical Society archives. And so it's just something that I felt that once I learned about Dickie Chappelle's story and felt that it was something that was worthy for me to put my time into because of the fact I really believe that she needs to be known on a much wider basis. So it's almost like once I accepted the mission, I have to see it through.
Well, and the mission went on for more than two decades and here the book is on the 50th anniversary of her death.
Yes, and I wish it had probably come out a lot earlier, but certainly I understand that we do tend to focus on certain key commemorative and anniversary dates and things like that, and so it's certainly not surprising that something as momentous as the 50th anniversary of something like this would bring attention, and I'm grateful for the opportunity that brought about, and of course it's very bittersweet because you know it really is like focusing on the death of somebody who was a loved one. But I realize that there's a greater good, and I really do believe that if that's the focal point that people need to have in order to become aware of Dickie Chappelle, then I'm grateful for that happening.
John Garofalo, thank you so much for bringing her story to us.
Thank you, Mitch. I appreciate the opportunity.
John Garofolo is the author of Dickie Chappelle Under Fire, photographs by the first American female war correspondent killed in action. Chappelle, who was a Sherwood native, died on the battlefield in Vietnam 50 years ago today. Garofolo will talk about Chappelle's work tomorrow at the Sherwood Village Center.